This year in Yeshiva they're learning Masechta Shabbos. Hopefully we're going to be going pretty much along the same thing we'll be doing in Shir in Yeshiva in terms of focusing on the Malachas. So we're going to be starting on Mishnah, Daf and Gimel, and going hopefully pretty much Keseder HaMalachas. What I wanted to do in just the next couple of Shirim really before we get started in terms of Efni Yontif proper, I thought we'd give a little bit of a some issues that are relevant, not just in terms of Malachas and Shabbos, but touching a little bit more on Malachas and Yontif as well. Some of the similarities, some of the differences between Malachas Shabbos and Malachas Yontif. So we'll get our feet wet a little bit in terms of the Malachas, but we're not going to actually start to proper with Zareah, Kharish, etc. until after Yontif. The first of the sugyas that I like to speak about a little bit this morning is really what the definition of Malacha is in terms of Yontif. So of course we already know that there are a whole series of things we're not permitted to do on Shabbos, and a whole series of things we're not permitted to do on Yontif, and 99% of them overlap. But every once in a while you find one where it's not exactly the same. There are certain things that are permissible on Yontif, certain things that are prohibited on Shabbos, and the question is, what exactly are the guidelines, what exactly are the parameters, how do we define the Shem Malacha vis-a-vis Yontif as different from Shabbos? So the sugi begins, not so much in Masechet Shabbos, but really more in Masechet Beitza, with the first of the Mam Kamos. So the Gemara is commenting on the very first Mishnah Masechet Beitza, the very famous Mishnah to the Masechet Beitza. It speaks about a Beitza, Shenol Dovi Yomtif, if you have an egg that was laid on Yomtif, what's the status of that egg? So it takes the Gemara about 8 blocks to figure out what the status of that egg is. I remember many years ago I was learning in Marsha Kolol, and I was learning Tamar Chavuzah about the Konigsberg Shlita. So we were learning the beginning of Masechet Beitza. So we were sitting on the base for a while. So somebody who came to visit us one day, so yes, so we're up to it, the base Shnol Deviyotif. Then he came back about a week later, and we were still sitting on the same sugya, base Shnol Deviyotif. So his comment was, he would have thought already after a week the egg would have hatched. But the mice said it takes a long time. So it's a long, long sugya. What makes the sugya somewhat long is that the Gemara can't quite figure out why a Beit Shnol Deviyotif is also in the first place. What's wrong with an egg that was laid at Yontif? So the Gemara comes up with 4 different possibilities, and each one becomes really a sugya in and of itself. Why is the Beit Shnol Deviyotif asur on Yontif? So one of the 4 reasons that the Gemara quotes in the first of the Mamre Kamos, and Beit Shnol Deviyotif on the basis of Yosef Amar, Gizeh Bishim Peres Anoshen, the reason why an egg that was laid in Yontif is off limits is because it resembles Peres Anoshen. Peres Anoshen mean fruit that fell off a tree on Yontif. We'll see as we go on Shabbos for sure. Fruit that fell off a tree on Shabbos and Yontif are off limits. One is not permitted to eat those fruits either on Shabbos or Yontif. Obviously, if the Shabbos Yontif will be mutter, but on Shabbos and Yontif, Peres Anoshen are prohibited. I was very excited this past Shabbos that we had a chance to actually look at Peres Anoshen. Our next door neighbor has an apple tree. Full force. The apples have fallen right and left. We were walking past the tree on Shabbos. We saw a bunch of fruit on the floor. So my kids got so excited. Wow, the apples on the floor. I said, not so fast. I said, we actually may get a chance to fulfill the dinner prayers and ocean. Oh, but it's only a Sophic prayers and ocean. Not so partial. A lot of alumnus. Probably finished alumnus. No one is interested in eating the apples anymore. But the bottom line is that there's a gzeirah of the Rabbanan called Peres Anoshen. So an apple that falls off a tree on Yontif is Osir. The Gemara says that an egg that comes out of the hen on Yontif is also Osir. It's almost the same thing. I mean, it's not quite the same thing. This is an apple, this is an egg, this is a hen, this is a tree, but it's the same type maybe in people's minds. It looks almost the same, and therefore it's included in the gzeirah of the Rabbanan called Peres Anoshen. So by yes, Rav Yosef, why should that be so? Peres Hanoshrin, time of my Gezer Rishon Yalav Yitlo. Why did Chazal prohibit fruit that fell off a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov? Because we're afraid that if you eat the apple that fell off the tree, the next thing you want is another apple. So you may go and climb up the tree and pluck another apple off, and that's going to be a problem. That's going to be an issa of Kaitzer. Kaitzer is one of the Lavetes Melochas. You're not allowed to harvest. Not only are you not allowed to harvest grain, you're not allowed to pluck fruits off a tree on Shabbos. So since we're afraid that a person may come to actually take a fruit off, therefore midrabbanon, they prohibited Peres Anoshen. So Peres Anoshen falls into the category of a gezeira midrabbanon. It's a gezeira upper malacha d'oraisa. So comes Abai and asks, if that's the case, so then I understand why we should prohibit Peres Anoshen. You're going to tell me that you should prohibit eating an egg that was laid on Yontif as a gezeira that it may come to lead to Peres Anoshen. That's what we call a gezeira le gezeira. It means it's already 2 steps removed from the deraisa. The deraisa is to plop off the apple. There's a gzeira, don't eat the apple that fell off. Gzeira, you may come to pluck off the apple. Then there's a second gzeira, don't eat the egg that was laid. Gzeira, you may come to eat that. It's very too far removed. So you go for gzeira, but not make a gzeira, gzeira, gzeira. We're going to make a gzeira, gzeira. We're not supposed to do that. So there's a question in the Rishonim, why are we not supposed to make gzeiras with gzeiras? So the pasuk shot is that it's unnecessary. How far do you have to make gzeiras? You make gzeiras to protect your eyes. You don't make gzeiras to protect your abundance. It's not that there's anything wrong with making a gzeira, gzeira, it's just that it's superfluous. Rashi has a comment in one place that when the Gemara says, ain't goes on gzeira, gzeira, what the Gemara means is that you're not allowed to. Because the Torah says, Ushmarti mes mishmarti. You have to protect the dini Torah, susi agla Torah. So we need a heter to make a gzeira. You can't just not make gzeiras. We stop making surim derabanan, the touchstone we spoke about last year a lot, of the end of next year, the shalom bal taisif. The rabbanan don't have a free hand, just do whatever they want. They have to make dinim derabanan that make sense. They have to make dinim derabanan that are necessary, that are there to protect the dini Torah. The stam going to make gzeiras right and left for no reason, so that's the shalom bal taisif. So when the Gemara says they know sin gzeira gzeira, that means not that we're not, it's not necessary to make it. It means we're not supposed to make it. We're not allowed to make it. So every limb shot in the Gemara, the bottom line is that ain't goes in gzeira gzeira. So if so, how come we made a gzeira de rabbanon not to eat the egg that was laid on Yontif? Gzeira the fruit that fell off the tree on Yontif, which is in turn a gzeira shem yalav yidlush. So comes the Gemara and answers, kulachad a gzeiri. And that's not considered to be a gzeira the gzeira. That's all considered to be part of the same gzeira. What in the world that means? Very unclear. So we're not going to learn that part of the sugya. Maybe that's why it took us a week to learn the sugya back in those years in Marasha. But the bottom line is that the Gemara somehow wasn't that concerned with this issue of Zer Lugzeira, and Rav Yosef's statement stands. So one of the four reasons why one is not allowed to eat a date to the Yontif is in fact Mishum Peres Anoshim. So this reason really does stand. This is a possible reason. Again, there are three others, but this is a potential reason for the Mishnah and Beita about why you're not allowed to eat a Beit Shalom. You have the Gezerah up to Peres Anoshim, a part of the Gezerah Peres Anoshim. I was once looking up in a Sefer, there's a Shaz the Emosha, written by Moshe Stern, about the previous Debrecina Rav, lived in the, first in Debrecina, and then from lived in Borough Park. So in his Shaz Chubas Ben Moshe, I was once looked up the Shaila about something, and I noticed it said in one of the Shailas, it says, Peres HaNoshim Mahalocha. So I thought, oh, there must be some Shaila about some issue, about apple trees in Borough Park, whatever, some Shaila about Peres HaNoshim. So I started to look up, see, sounds interesting, what could he possibly say about Peres HaNoshim that we hadn't learned yet? So I took a look at Peres HaNoshim. A shaila about, I don't know, some complicated shaila, I was getting, I don't know what it was. So there must be some mistake in the print. Peres HaNoshim. So I started to fiddle around for the tshuva that I was looking for, and I noticed right next to the tshuva that I was looking for also the Peres HaNoshim Halacha. I said, oh, this must be the right tshuva. Some shaila, some complicated convoluted shaila, did your mom and I couldn't figure out what was going on. Every page is a printing mistake, every page. And then I realized afterwards, Peres HaNoshim Halacha at the end of every tshuva, what his style of tshuva was, he'd give you a whole shekel Torah, and then he would give you, like the end of the tshuva, the summary, Peres HaNoshim Halacha. I mean, this is the fruit that's falling out, Halacha. This is what you have to know, Halacha. So this is the bottom line. So that's nothing to do with fruit, nothing to do with yantas, nothing to do with eggs, it had to do with whatever that particular shayla was. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So come the Rishonim, and this is an important issue on this sugya, which really starts us off in terms of that sugya. We're not really learning the sugya of Ventishnol to be honest. Now we're not really learning the sugya of Peres HaNoshim either now. What we're learning is the more general statement of which malachas are off limits on Yontif in comparing and contrasting to Shabbos. So come to Rishonim and make the following observation is that it's obvious in this entire Gemara that one is not permitted to pluck fruit off a tree on Yontif. Because after all, the Mishnah is talking about a Ventishnol to be Yontif. And the reason why the egg is usher is a gazer you may come to, in a sense, eat the fruit, which is in turn a gazer you may come to pluck the fruit. The implication is quite obvious that you're not allowed to pluck fruit off a tree on Yontif. Why should that be such a startling statement? Because lechora, at first glance, that should fall under the category we call lechom nefesh. We all know, in Paskin Pashas Bo, achashay ocha lechom nefesh uvav yos alachem. It's mutim to lechom nefesh on Yontif. You're allowed to cook on Yontif. You're allowed to catch food on Yontif. You're allowed to light fires under certain circumstances for cooking. You're allowed to bake. You're allowed to eat. You're allowed to do a lot of things for food on Yontif. why are you not allowed to pluck for Yom Yatif? If the whole Isser Peres HaNoshrin is because of Shemiyah Levi Yitlosh, so it's clear for the Gemara that Kalisha, that Ketzira, that Koytzer is Aser on Yom Tif. Why is that so? How do we understand this Gemara, the Beis and Deitza, in light of what the public says in Chumash, that Echol Nefesh is Muslim? That's the basic question that we're going to have to deal with, the issue that all the Rishonim have to grapple with. How do you understand why Koytzer is Aser on Yom Tif on the one hand, but on the other hand, Echol Nefesh is permissible? So the truth is that this is not the only problem in terms of Melechus Yom Tif. This is not the only Melecha that catches our attention that should have been Mutter, yet we find this also on Yom Tif. So we go ahead to the second one of Maamar Kamos, the Mishnah, in the beginning of the third parak on the second Beis, the Mishnah speaks about Ein Sodin Dagim and Abibrim Yom Tif. It is not permitted to trap fish. You have fish swimming around little pools, so you're not allowed to trap the fish on Yom Tif. Which also raises the question, why not? What am I going to do with the fish? Obviously, I want to eat the fish. If I have fish on Yom Tif, if I have raw fish in my freezer, I'm allowed to cook it on Yom Tif. I'm allowed to carry the fish in the street on Yom Tov. I'm allowed to do all kinds of malachas that are involved in the preparation of the fish. Why am I not allowed to trap the fish? Why am I not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov? So we have two basic questions. Why am I not allowed to go apple picking on Yom Tov? And why am I not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov? L'chora, both of these malachas fall under the category of Echol Nefesh. So there's a major machlekes to be shown on what the answer to this question is. The answer to both of these questions is. And the answer to that question is going to really set up for us what the parameters of are in terms of the definition of malachas on Yom Tov, particularly vis-a-vis Shabbos. So comes Rashi in the third of the Maamar Kamos. Rashi on the Mishnah Maseches Beitza and is already bothered with that question. So comes Rashi and says, "Afal gav, you're not allowed to catch fish. You're not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov. Afal gav deshchita v'afi uvishol miyavos malachas hay." Says Rashi, wait a second. We know that there are at least three other malachos that are also avos malachos. They're all main categories of malacha. They all carry with them the same onesh on Shabbos. If a person shucks an animal on Shabbos, that's an issur d'oraisa. If a person bakes, a person cooks. These are all standard malachos on Shabbos. Futur l'tzorech Yom Tov. And they're all mutter for Yom Tov. So ask Rashi our question. If shechita, afi, and bishul are real bona fide malachos, and they're still permissible on Yom Tov, so manishtana, that seiza, the trapping, which is also malacha, why is that not mutter on Yom Tov? What to borrow the question back to the Kibbul, manishtana, that koitzer is also in Yom Tov. So what is it about koitzer and seiza, about harvesting and trapping, that is fundamentally, radically different than the regular malacha, the Bechon Nefesh, Chita, Bishlafi, etc.? Comes Rashi and says the answer is as follows. Taima, Rishum de'i Efshar me'erv Yom Tov. Says Rashi, the answer is very simple. The rule is, whatever could have been done from before Yom Tov, must be done from before Yom Tov. Whatever could not have been done from before Yom Tov, then and only then is it permissible on Yom Tov. So now Rashi goes through down the list. Tishchita, what do you mean you could have shechted from before Yom Tov? You couldn't have shechted from before Yom Tov. We're afraid that the meat may start to get warmed up. The meat's going to start to rot. You live in an age before refrigeration. You shecht an animal yesterday. By the time you get ready to cook it today, it's not going to taste very good anymore. About Seda, says Rashi, says Rashi, trapping fish, you could trap the fish from before Yom Tov. You set up your net, Rashi's giving you ready the fisherman's guide what to do. You set up your net in such a way that the fish is basically trapped. You're not going to take it out of the water. Take it out of the water. Even I'm not a fisherman, but I know that's probably not going to work too well. I don't know that from my expertise in fishing. I only know that from Rabbi Akiva's story, Papa's, about take the fish out of the water. So the bottom line is, fishing you can do basically from before. Any kind of malacha that can be done from before and that's not going to negatively impact on the taste of the food must be done from before. Anything that your hands are tied, you're stuck. What are you going to ask the guy to start cooking yesterday? Food's going to taste terrible.
We do it every week for Shabbos, though.
Yeah, well, it's not really fair because we have what's called a refrigerator. So tell your wife on Friday to cook the food and leave it out of the fridge and see what happens.
But I'm saying even then they cook for Shabbos Friday.
Okay. Nothing happened. It was better when it tasted when it's fresh. So that's what Rashi is telling us, that whatever the food's going to be better, whatever it's going to taste better, so that's the head of the cook to prepare for the Yom Tov. The Rashi basically just told us that when you analyze Malach and Yom Tov, there, it's not that there are different categories of malachas. This is not any rocket science in terms of certain malachas are mutter, certain malachas are asar. This is not even what we call, this is not an issue in the Beis Medrash. We're not going to pass the shayla. Our wives are going to pass in the shayla. This is not a halachic shayla. This is not a lamdusha shayla. Ooh, this malach is asar, this malach is mutter, this is not. Net, close the gemaras and beitzes, open up the cookbooks, ask your wives, and tell you. Bottom line, is this food going to taste just as good if it's done beforehand? Then the answer is, it's going to be also. If the answer is it's going to taste not as good, then the answer is it's going to be mutter. Where did Rashi dream up this idea that there makes a difference between whether it's Efshim Mibiyad Yom, Efshim Mibiyad Yom? Where do we find such a concept? If something is mutter, so it's mutter. If it's mutter, it's also. Why should it make a difference? It could have, should have, would have. Where do we find such an idea? So those who are learning Daf Yomi will immediately realize that this is something that we find in other areas of Halacha. Pick them up today. Today's Daf, yesterday's Daf, right in the beginning of the sixth parakh of Masechet Pesachim, where the Gemara is discussing the sugya of bringing a Korban Pesach on Shabbos. When Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, so we know the Halacha is that the Korban Pesach, the Shechita Pesach, is Berech Shabbos. We're all proud of ourselves that we say, we know that. We know. The Gemara says not everybody knew that. The Gemara says it was actually a shayla at one time that they forgot it. The Gemara says apparently there was many years that it hadn't been Erev Pesach on Shabbos. It doesn't come out all the time. So yeah, many, many years there was no Erev Pesach on Shabbos. And all of a sudden the shayla came up. They couldn't remember the Beis HaMikdash. The calendar, everyone scratched their head. They don't remember. They're checking the calendar. Well, what did we do last year? No one remembers. What did we do 20 years ago? No one remembered. So Hillel had just arrived from Bavel, and he remembered, he knew the din was that Korban Pesach was Berech HaShabbos. But Gemara tells a fascinating story at the beginning of the sixth parak of Pesachim, that the Bnei B'Seir, they were the Rabbanim, they were the in charge of the Beis Din at that period, and they couldn't remember what the din was. So Hillel, it was a nobody, it was a stranger, no one knew who he was. He had just arrived from Bavel, and he said he had a tradition from his Rebbeim that Korban Pesach was Berech HaShabbos. So what did they do? So they put him in charge. So he got the job. Can you imagine? As long as that. The rabbi's given a whole shiur, doesn't know what the din is. Someone from nobody comes out of nowhere, and he tells what the din is. So the rabbi steps down, and he becomes the new rabbi. That's exactly what the Gemara says. So anyway, so Hillel was the Chadish, they have this din, and then they realize, yeah, talking, that was the din. That was talking the tradition. They come face on the Dech HaShabbos. The Gemara quotes the Machlekes HaTanoim between Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, and I'm sure the Tanoim got involved in the Shaila. When we say that Korban Pesach is Dech HaShabbos, what does that mean? Does that mean whatever's necessary for Korban Pesach is Dech HaShabbos? Or does that mean, no, not anything that's necessary? It's only those parts of Korban Pesach that couldn't have been done yesterday. Well, the Shechitas of Pesach, you can't check the Korban Pesach the day before. That's possible. This is Mashal. The Pesach has to be dafted in our Pesach in the afternoon. So the Shechita is Dech HaShabbos. What about, let's say, the bringing of the animal, carrying the animal from your house? Nobody told you to carry the animal on Shabbos. You could have carried the animal to Shalom yesterday. Well, let's say there was a certain mum on the animal that had to be removed. Nobody told you to wait till Shabbos to do it. You could have done it on Friday. So come to Eliezer and says, doesn't matter. Whatever is necessary, the show must go on. The Korban Pesach has to be brought. Whether you could have done it yesterday, could have, should have, would have, doesn't matter. Whatever has to be done can be done today. So according to Belez, you can carry the army, you can cut off the movie, whatever you need. And Rabbi Akiva says no. Rabbi Akiva says, Kol malacha she'efshel la'asayis in the bayyan, any malacha that could have been done yesterday should have been done yesterday. And if it wasn't done yesterday, then tough luck. You can't bring the Korban Pesach today. And if you can't find yourself another animal, so tough, you can't bring a Korban today. So machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Then the Gemara says that this machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva was the same machlekes in terms of bris milah. We all know there's a din that a milah, the Yom HaShemini, milah bizmano, is Dech HaShabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer says the same pizman. Rabbi Eliezer says that let's say you're about to do a bris on Shabbos and you realize you don't have a knife. You realize you don't have a mail. So what do you do? So Rabbi Eliezer says, no problem. Go make a knife. Go chop down a tree. Go make yourself firewood. Take some metal, melt down the iron, turn it into a knife. You can do 100 malachas in order to make yourself a knife. You should have made the knife yesterday. Should have, could have, would have, but didn't. The knife is overnight. So now I can make a knife today. Or let's say it comes Shabbos morning and you realize, whoopsie, there's no mail. No big deal. So Rabbi Eliezer says, you pick up a phone, you call Washington Heights, call up a captain, says, do me a favor, please come to do a bris today. He says, no problem, picks up the phone, gets into his car, drives over the bridge, and comes to do the bris. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that's Heter Gomer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you're allowed to drive in Shabbos to do a bris, you're allowed to carry in Shabbos, you're allowed to make anything, whatever is necessary. Mila Bezmanas Dech HaShabbos. And Rabbi Akiva says, no. Rabbi Akiva says, Mila b'zman is Bechah Shabbos. That means whatever has to be done today, namely the Mila itself. But the driving of the mile, you should have done it yesterday. The making the night, you should have done it yesterday. And you didn't do it yesterday, you can't do it today. So we have Machlekes, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva both wake up in Pesach and by Mila b'Shabbos. So we have the pass like Rabbi Akiva. We pass in that if the mile drives to the Bris of Shabbos, that's Chil Shabbos Deraisa. Can you imagine what one of the biggest problems people have when they live out of town is ever they have a 3-day yontif. 3-day yontif, you want to have a bris. You live in the middle of Alaska, you want to have a bris. You have to pay a mile to come for 3 days. Pay a mile to come for Rosh Hashanah, for Pesach. It's a lot of money. According to Bilazar, what's the big deal? The mile doesn't have to come. The mile can stay with his family. And he'll come in the afternoon. He'll come hop a plane and fly to the Abris in Chmeis in the middle of Alaska. So we don't pasik Rabbi Yehuda, we pasik Rabbi Akiva. So Rashi seems to be borrowing this concept of Epshar versus E-Epshar from other areas of Halacha. He's borrowing it from Korban Pesach, borrowing it from Bris Milah, and plugging it into Malacha and Yom Tov. So it's a little bit strange that Rashi is borrowing this concept, because l'chora, this idea that you have to always ask yourself, was it Epshar, was it E-Epshar, could I have done it, should I have done it, would I have done it, did I do it? Those questions that Rabbi Akiva is forcing us to ask on for a Bris on Shabbos, for a Pesach on Shabbos, l'chora, those questions fall into the category of Halacha, what we call Dechuya. Dechuya means, like the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Sefer Yuma, that very often you have a situation where there's a conflict in Halacha. The Halacha tells us, don't do such and such. On the other hand, the Torah says, by the way, do such and such. So every once in a while, those two contradict each other. What do you do? It's like a life dilemma. You have two contradictory things. I'm not supposed to do X, but I am supposed to do Y. So what do you do? So every once in a while, the Torah says that Y is doicha X, that such and such is doicha something else. So the Gemara raises the question, Maseches Yuma, whenever you have that type of an idea, that something is doicha something else, does it mean beged the dechuya, or is it beged the hutra? Dechuya means that it's really a bad thing that you're doing. It's really an avera that you're doing. But nevach, what can you do? The Torah says, you have to do it anyway. So the Torah says that action in X is more important than action Y. It's not that you're not doing an avera, quote unquote. You don't have to cop a chafer, don't worry about it. But it's really a nice avera. It's really a nice iser. But the Torah says, nevach, doing the mitzvah is more important than doing the avera. That's one way of understanding. Or maybe you can understand what's called hutra. Hutra means, when the Torah says to do X, and the Torah says don't do Y, what the Torah is saying is that Y doesn't exist. The Yisr doesn't exist. It's mutter. It's commanded in the Mandalay Yisr Dami. So the Moshe, the Gemara raises the question in the realm of Avodas HaKarbonos. There are certain Karbonos that are Docha Tuma. If you have to bring a certain carbon in the state of Tuma, one opinion the Gemara says, it's Dechuya. It's a bad thing. Bringing a carbon to Tuma is bad. It's an Aveir. It's a terrible thing. But Nebuch, with a heavy heart, you have to do it anyway. What do I say? No, it's not a heavy heart. It's no tumah. It's no issa b'chol. V'chi agav, there's no such thing as tumah. Tumah's hutra, it's sibur. The Gemara has a machlokes about that. Nafkamina ladina, the Gemara says, is how much you have to avoid doing it. If you hold that tumah is d'chuya b'tzibur, then you have to stand on your head and find the kohen's tar and try really, really hard to avoid doing it. If push comes to shove, you can't do anything, you can't find a way out. Nebuch, with a heavy heart, you have to do it. If you hold that tumah is hutra b'tzibur, the rest of the ministry is full. It's mutter. This is not tumah. The Torah never spoke about this. It's not a ma'is aver b'chlam. So this sugi is about this in Maseches Yuma, in terms of tumah b'tzibur, in terms of avodas hakabonos, b'tzibur, shabbat. You have a lot of discussions in the Gemara and the Rishonim about these two concepts called the chuya versus hutra. When the Torah says to do something which is otherwise an avera, does the Torah mean to say it's an avera, but do it anyway? Or does the Torah say it's not an avera? One of the most famous examples that we have, one of the most relevant examples, is Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. So the Torah says, V'chai b'hem, a person's life is in danger, you have to go ahead and drive to the hospital, whatever you have to do, whatever is necessary, you have to do. How do we view this idea of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos? Do we say Pikuach Nefesh is, it's the Chuya, namely, it's really Shabbos today, and there's really a terrible, terrible avera called Chil Shabbos. What are you going to do? Saving life is more important than Chil Shabbos, so you do it anyway. Again, not that you have to klap al chayt, but it's fundamentally called an aveira. It's an isser that the Torah tells you that you have to do. What do I say now? That vis-a-vis a chayl on Shabbos, it's not Shabbos, it's Tuesday today, it's not Shabbos, the isser of Shabbos doesn't apply today. My nafkamina. You have to do it anyway. The bottom line is you can do it anyway. No, it's a big nafkamina. How much you have to start, try to cut corners? How much you have to try to avoid? So again, if playing games is going to impact on the health of the chayla, then chas v'shalom, then you're not allowed to do anything. But sometimes you have a situation where I have to do mechal Shabbos, but I have time. It's not a type of an emergency that every second counts. It's a type of an emergency that it doesn't matter whether I get to the hospital in the next 10 minutes or get to the hospital in the next hour. I can't wait till after Shabbos. That can't wait. But I have to get there before Shabbos is over. I can get there in 10 minutes. I can get there in an hour. So the question is, how much do I have to drag around? How much do I have to avoid? Do I have to call a non-Jew to drive me to the hospital? Can I drive myself? How much do I have to do things kiliyachayad if I can? I didn't say to driving kiliyachayad. Driving with the back of your hand is not a good idea for many reasons. Not only on Shabbos and Tuesday also. But how much? Let's say I have to make a phone call. So can I just pick up the phone and just call just like that? Or should I press the phone with the back of my hand and my elbows? How much do I have to maneuver to avoid acts of Chil Shabbos? So l'chora, that question depends on what's my take on Chil Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. Is Pikuach Nefesh d'chuya? Means the Aveira is there, and if and when it must be violated, Nebuch, I must violate it. But if I can avoid violating, I must avoid it. What do I say? No. It's a whole new ballgame. Hutra on Shabbos, do whatever you want. I mean, within reason, obviously, you can't do unnecessary things, but whatever is necessary, is Hutra on Shabbos. So that type of a chakir, that type of a question, permeates many, many areas of halacha. L'chora, the view of Rabbi Akiva starts to tell us that not so simple. Meal on Shabbos is not a freebie. Korban Pesach on Shabbos is not a freebie. It's not that hetek gamur. You have to maneuver and figure out, is it necessary, is it not necessary? Could you have done it from before? Those questions that Rabbi Akiva is asking us sound like they're pointing in the direction that these types of mitzvahs are dechuya. It's not that it's just a green light. It's the hetek gamur, do whatever you want on Shabbos. You have a bris, mazel tov, it's not Shabbos today. You have a korban Pesach, mazel tov, it's not Shabbos. No. It's Shabbos. And there's an Issachul Shabbos, and now you have to ask yourself very, very pointed questions. Is this necessary? Is it not necessary? Can I avoid it? Can I not avoid it? L'chora, those questions are indicating a longus, an analysis, that these types of mitzvahs are not quite Matir Shabbos, rather they're Doiche Shabbos. Rashi, who's borrowing these concepts into Malachas Yontif, and now telling us, wait, it's time to cook on Yontif? Don't think you have a green light to cook on Yontif. That's also be your light to cook on Yontif. If you're stuck, if you're in the corner, nebuch, 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 you don't have anything to eat, so to speak, on Yontif, and you couldn't have cooked yesterday because the food's going to spoil, it's not going to taste as good, your hands are tied. All right, the Torah says in a sense, like quote unquote with a heavy heart, nebuch, 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 we'll let you cook on Yontif. What can you do? To trap an animal on Yontif, chalila v'chalila. To pluck an apple off, chalila v'chalila. What do you have to pluck it off today? Pluck it off yesterday? What do you have to go fishing? Did they go fishing yesterday? Nothing will happen to the fish. So for the fact that Rashi is introducing to us this idea, this concept of asking questions, is it Efshim Ibidyom? Is it Efshim Ibidyom? Rashi is not just telling us a detail about Malachas Yontif. Rashi seems to be touching upon a very basic question, namely, what's the nature of this heter of Eichel Nefesh? The Torah says, you're not allowed to do malacha. Third night malachas, and all of a sudden the Torah starts mattering things. The Torah says, well, it's okay. You can cook, you can bake, you can carry, you can light fire. You can do half a dozen malachas in Yontif. How do you understand that heter of Yontif? Do we understand that Eichel Nefesh is what we call the chuya? It means fundamentally, conceptually, Shabbos and Yontif are the same. There's really one standard of malacha. 39 malachas. That's it. Whatever you can't do on Shabbos, you can't do on Yontif. Oh, and by the way, as an aside, there's a special din called Eichel Nefesh. Eichel Nefesh is doicha the Yisur Malacha. It's like Mila is doicha the Yisur Malacha on Shabbos. Korban Pesach is doicha the Yisur Malacha on Shabbos. Eichel Nefesh and Yontif is doicha. Simchas Yontif is so important. It's doicha the Yisur Malacha on Yontif. That's what Rashi seems to be saying. However, one could have presented conceptually a very, very different view of Yontif. One could present that when I cook on Yontif, I don't have to feel guilty about cooking on Yontif. It's not, I'm not doing anything bad that never we were about here. It's not like driving to the hospital on Shabbos. Cooking on Yontif was never us in the first place. The Torah never said cooking on Yontif. The Torah said there are 33 malachas us on Yontif. The standards of malachas are very, very different on Yontif than Shabbos. So let's keep Rashi, no pun intended, in the back burner. The Rashi seems to be saying that malachas Yontif, malachas Eichel Nefesh is not glatt. not Mahadrin and Mahadrin. It's not something that's like mutter in the sense of Chila. You're allowed to do it the same way you're allowed to draft the hospital on Shabbos. You're allowed to do it the same way Nebuch, you're allowed to do the Bris Mila on Shabbos. I say Nebuch with a little bit of a grain of salt here. But you're allowed to cook on Yontif, but you're not really allowed to cook on Yontif.
Today you would be allowed to.
Yeah, according to Rashi, it would be an unbelievable chumrah. Because who says you're allowed to cook chalal according to Rashi? If you can stick it in the refrigerator, and it will taste the same. So I'll leave it to your judgment. Is that really true? It will taste the same. So there are some poskim who based on this Rashi, have thrown a tremendous monkey wrench into all the preparation on Yom Tov. There are some gedolei poskim who today say l'halacha, but yet you won't believe this one. You're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov today. Because it's actually maybe a yom. The same way that Rashi says you could hunt, you could fish from yesterday, you can pluck apples from yesterday, you can cook the chicken from yesterday, it'll taste just as good. The minig olam doesn't seem to be this way. The minig olam seems to be lahakal for a variety of reasons. First of all, who says we pass like is Rashi? That's number one. And number two, even according to Rashi, one could argue that it doesn't taste the same. The bottom line is, I mean, I'm not such a finicky eater, but the bottom line is, yeah, you get a piece of chicken that's, you know, right out of the oven. Please don't feed this to rabbit. Get a piece of chicken. Don't forget to compliment to the chicken. Piece of chicken on, I mean, you know, but today? Today's Tuesday. Tuesday night's chicken, which is sometimes Shabbos' chicken, is not quite the same as Friday night's chicken. We'll leave it at that. So I think that the Olam is knowing Lahokal, a combination of we're not so sure Pi Alokha that Rashi is right, and we're not so sure from a culinary point of view that those facts that you're saying are correct.
So you can say that also, but according to Rashi, if you have a day where, you know, if you didn't have your lunch to eat, you can't drink an apple.
Well, the question is when. Well. Going back to the model of the Bris Mila, the guy forgot to call the well. He forgot. What do you want from him? He forgot to call the well. Now it's Shabbos morning. He's standing out of the well. So according to we pass, and he can't call the well.
But if you did everything, like let's say a family of 10 shows up on your doorstep Yom Tov morning, and all of a sudden you need fish. Why can't you go to the pond and get fish?
Because the malacha of fishing is a kind of a malacha that's actually not supposed to be on the yom. So you're right, and you're going back to the marshal of the mile. A baby pops in Shabbos morning. We didn't know what's supposed to have a bris. All of a sudden, a baby walks in. I mean, they bring a baby in to show Shabbos morning. So I have to call him. No, can't call him out because it's Efshalasos. Nobody did. Nobody knew. No, it doesn't matter. Once we're today that this action is an Efshalasos, the chari that's going to be called Efshalasos. You're touching on a major, major point in terms of the definition of Efshalasos, the Efshalasos, which the pashtus and the areas that we're talking about, the Ahagdar is correct, but it may not always be correct. I'm afraid to start going off in the tangent. It's an important issue. The Kitzin Nimritz, the Gemara speaks in the realm of Essay Dochalosa, say, is Efshar Lekayem Shneim, Yefshar Lekayem Shneim, is that based on the objective standards of Efshar? Is that based on the subjective standards of Efshar? That has an important relevance to this as well. But we're going to assume for now that all these cases are called Efshar Lekayem. So I hope part of at least we have Rashi's beginning of the answer as to why we find certain malachas off limits on Yom Tov, which are not pure halachic considerations, the more the issue of Efshar versus Efshar. Again, Rashi's whole formulation strikes us somewhat as surprising because our initial reaction to halachas Yom Tov doesn't seem to be that it's the Chulya. Hope we mention tomorrow. We'll continue a little bit more in terms of this. Okay.
We just said,